Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
Scripture tells us, let not steadfast love and faithfulness forsake you. Write them on the tablet of your heart.
My full, complete, unconditional support for marriage equality is at odds with the current doctrine of the church that I still attend. But I think that's going to change too.
Well, the real thing is what's in your heart. The real thing is our spiritual things, not these external things we do. Emotions are the sacrament for most American evangelical Protestants.
Topics you can really sink your teeth into. That's why Iowa dentists love Issues Etc.
Maybe you thought you never would, but maybe you are right now, longing for some good old-fashioned American liberalism. You know, the old kind of liberalism that was more of the live and let live liberalism, but it was the kind that recognized that there are going to be differences between people of goodwill, differences of opinion and of ideas and of politics and practice, and said, you know, it's a big tent, it's all good, we're going to agree to disagree in the realm of politics. There's a time to reach compromise and there's a time to simply tolerate one another. And old liberalism used to be really good at that for all its weaknesses. Nowadays, I think I'd give a lot for some good old-fashioned American liberalism. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Wednesday afternoon, September the 14th, we are coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio. We're going to be talking about the lifestyle left and Christian dissent and the growing intolerance on the part of the left. Andrew Walker is going to join us from the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. Then a little bit later, it's This Week in Pop American Christianity with Pastor Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith. We're going to talk about the big event that was held this week, the Code Orange Revival, a who's who of heretics, he says. We'll hear a little bit from him and get his ideas on that. Joining us to talk about the lifestyle left and Christian dissent, Andrew Walker. He's director of policy studies for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, "The Left Needs to Call Off Its Radical Fringe, Bent on Destroying Christians." Andrew, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd. It's good to be with you.
From what you've written recently, it sounds like you're longing for some good old-fashioned American liberalism. Why is that?
So I will confess it does sound strange that as a political and theological conservative to call for a particular type of liberalism. What I mean by that is the liberalism that I think we're needing today is a type of liberalism that is genuinely pluralistic, that recognizes that people have the ability to disagree, and when they disagree, we're not depicting or painting the other side with the worst possible motives. And I think we actually had that strand of liberalism prior to what we are seeing rise today as a very intolerant form of liberalism. There was a liberalism back in the day that, you know, we would debate policy, but we all recognized that there was goodwill difference between how we viewed the world. And now, increasingly, there's a much more, quite frankly, fundamentalist type of liberalism that's very, very progressive, and it views all sorts of harms through kind of this psychological grid. And so anything that offends the psychology or offends the emotional state of a progressive is therefore now not welcomed in the public square, and there's not this understanding that we can allow for dissent. It's that we actually have to make that person stop holding those beliefs because those beliefs are dangerous. And that's just a different type of liberalism than what the American tradition of liberalism has typically been about.
You say that the way that the progressive have been increasingly pursuing their line of argument is morally incoherent. What do you mean by that?
So when I say that they're being morally incoherent, is that in this piece, all forms of kind of the moral life, according to the progressive worldview, is that more or less, if it feels good, you should just go ahead and do it or act on it. But that's not a basis from which to ground morality, because each of us, as Christians especially, we know that each of us has desires and perceptions and feelings that we know should not be acted on just because they are occurring inside of us. And so, you know, you see this from the issue of same-sex marriage, from the issue of kind of the culture of noncommittal sex to the issue of transgender ideology, is that if you have this desire, the greatest thing you can do for that desire is to act on it. And now the one unforgivable sin in kind of the liberal system of orthodoxy is to tell someone that you can't act on that particular desire. Because ultimately, we really know that even those who act out on this and say that we should live by our desires, no one really believes that, because all of us believe intuitively that there are moral limits. It's just the sense that for today's progressive liberalism, they are not necessarily applying that standard of belief and criteria across the board fairly.
Give us some examples of what you call a complete lack of magnanimity on the part of progressives today.
So the thing I point to is you have Chad Griffin, who's the president of the Human Rights Campaign, which is arguably the most influential and symbolically important gay rights organization in the United States. And if any organization or if any person has the ability to kind of frame the discussion about how gay rights and religious liberty are going to coexist, it's really, really necessary for someone who has the ability and kind of the symbolic power to shape that narrative, to shape it positively. And tragically, if you look at the rhetoric coming out of the Human Rights Campaign, if you look at the rhetoric coming out of Chad Griffin's Twitter timeline, there's increasingly this idea that if you don't agree wholesale with every single thing that the Human Rights Campaign stands for, it's not that you're someone with whom we just disagree. It's that you're actually someone who is doing violence and is doing harm. And so the response to those types of people is to say you're not welcomed in polite society. And I think in just when we really stand back and see what's happening, there's a move on the left to treat any dissenting voice on the sexual revolution as the equivalent of a member of the KKK. And so, again, what do we do with members of the KKK in society? Well, you can technically exist on the fringe and on the margins as a KKK member, but you're not welcomed in polite society because rightfully we find racist beliefs abhorrent. The problem is that that's a false equivalency to then say that believers in a traditional or biblical understanding of sexuality are engaging in the same type of invidious discrimination and irrational bigotry that racists are engaging in. We've had 2,000 years of moral theology and biblical teaching that Western civilization has all attested to about why we believe men and women are made for one another. And then all of a sudden now to kind of throw that idea and to throw the philosophy and the theology that really was a foundation for Western civilization into the dustbin is really, it's laughable and myopic, and quite frankly, it's very sad.
How do you respond to someone who says, look, this is just Christians getting their comeuppance because they dominated the levers of power in society, especially American society, for so long, and they kept people in the closet and behind closed doors and shut them out of polite society. It's just a little comeuppance for Christians.
Well, actually, you know, I want to be very honest in how I answer that, and there's a sense to which some of that is true. I am not going to sit here and say that Christians and conservative Christians have always handled these issues of sexual morality well in society. It was the case in a good percentage of churches that we made certain sins more taboo than others, and we stigmatized certain sins over others. And so there's a sense in which, you know, we are to blame to some extent for this. But the difference here is that even though we might have been mistaken in our response, we weren't mistaken in our beliefs. And so right now we're seeing complete hostility from the left that is wanting to drive what we would consider right belief out of polite society.
Talk about the alliance that has been made, and to me it's just sadly a natural alliance, between the lifestyle left and left-leaning Christianity.
Sure. So one of the really interesting things is to see the evolution of where progressive Christians have gone on the question of LGBT sexual morality. You know, as few as 2 or 3 years ago, what we constantly heard, what the constant refrain was from progressive Christians was, really, we just want to have room to disagree, but to disagree as Christians. We want to treat this as an issue, for example, of whether or not churches can have female pastors. So this kind of agree to disagree, but we're all on the same team. And what we really want is just dialogue, to let us have a seat at the table and for you to understand that our interpretations of the text are just as viable as your interpretations of the text. So that's where we were 2 or 3 years ago. But if you go and look at the rhetoric online with social media and you pay attention to where the rhetoric of the progressive LGBT Christian left has gone, they're following suit with what you see with the progressive secular left, is that there's no room for disagreement on the issue of sexuality. Again, like I said, if you are holding to traditional biblical sexual ethics, you're now engaging in direct harm and violence. And one of the tweets I linked to in my Federalist piece, it says, you know, this individual says, there's no time to mince words with those who are doing harm. And how quickly things have changed from where we want to just agree to disagree to you're doing harm, now stop. So there's just, it's baffling.
You talk about the lifestyle lefts and the Christian left's desire not only to control the debate, but also the language of the debate as well. What are you talking about there?
So there's a very influential young progressive LGBT Christian named Matthew Vines, and he calls every single Christian that affirms the biblical stance on homosexuality and what the church has taught for 2,000 years, he refers to us as non-affirming Christians because we don't affirm homosexuality. And he calls all Christians who affirm homosexuality as affirming Christians. Now, we have to really catch the rhetorical sleight of hand of what's going on here. He is now labeling us, the individuals who have affirmed a definition of sexual morality that is backed up with the Bible, it's backed up with natural law, it's backed up with 2,000 years of moral theology. It's a positive affirmation about how God made our bodies and how we're to use our bodies. He's now labeling us non-affirming. So that automatically puts us on the defensive. In the article I mentioned, it's akin to asking the question, when did you stop abusing animals? Well, it assumes a guilty party from the start. And so that's kind of the language tricks that are going on, is that it's automatically painting Christians who don't agree with the LGBT ideology as in the form of negation, that we're the bad guys, that our first default is no. When in reality, what Christians are saying is actually yes to God's design for human sexuality and what the Bible teaches about how men and women are to relate to one another and how we're to understand why our bodies matter.
You also use as an example the recent Obergefell decision on the part of the Supreme Court. How does that play into this?
The Obergefell decision is very important because it signals that the government is now adopting a different understanding of marriage. And what's very fearful, or what could happen and what we're seeing happen, is that if any institution or person or business or nonprofit is on the opposite side of the government's new definition of marriage, they're very likely to be seen as someone who's engaging in some type of bad position or wrong position. And we're very possible to have happen where people's tax statuses or tax exemptions are going to be challenged. And I think this is really problematic because pre-Obergefell, we weren't going after the different types of organizations that were on the opposite side of the government's definition of marriage, that were working to redefine marriage before Obergefell. So if we weren't going after institutions and their tax-exempt status before Obergefell, I don't think we should be going after institutions' tax status after Obergefell. There needs to be this understanding that citizens can agree to disagree about the definition of marriage and that we don't have to belittle or attack each other's institutions that don't agree with the government's definition.
You talk about the willingness on the part of American progressives to not only, in one sense, call off the dogs, and we've talked about kind of the dog pack mentality here, but also whether or not there are any adults in the room who are still willing to tap the brakes, so to speak, on the headlong rush of progressives to silence all opposition, Christian and otherwise. Is there still anybody in the room that you think could let up on the accelerator or tap the brakes?
There are, for sure. The question is are those voices the voices rising to the top? You know, I actually want to commend President Obama. When he made his announcement in 2012, he made the very important statement that he recognizes that there were good people, there were people of goodwill on both sides of the marriage debate. And I think the president's rhetoric there is very, very important, and it's rhetoric that the left needs to adopt once again, and to recognize that just because you believe in a conjugal or complementary view of marriage, it doesn't mean that you're meaning anyone else harm. Tragically, again, as I've said all through this interview, this is not the approach that the left is taking towards those of us who don't agree with same-sex marriage. There are other individuals like Jonathan Rauch at the Brookings Institute, who is himself a gay man who is married according to the law. I know Jonathan Rauch. He's a very nice guy. He believes in religious liberty. He believes in the right to dissent. And most importantly, he doesn't think that we're bad people for believing 2,000 years of what the Bible teaches and Christian theology. And he recognizes that there's more coherence, even though he himself is not a Christian, he recognizes there's more to our theology than can simply be written off as rank bigotry. There's individuals like David Blankenhorn who don't agree with Christians on the issue of sexuality, but agree that we need to depolarize the issue and to come to an understanding that not everyone is a bad person on this issue who doesn't agree. And then you have individuals like Andrew Sullivan, who, you know, has taken a bold stance online about not the left not being as intolerant as he accuses the right as having once been. Tragically, you know, these voices are really needed. They're very important, but I fear they're being ostracized in their own communities.
Andrew Walker is director of policy studies for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. He's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled "The Left Needs to Call Off Its Radical Fringe Bent on Destroying Christians." You'll find a link to this column and to the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Andrew, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Pastor Chris Roseborough, Fighting for the Faith, will be with us on the other side of the break. We'll be doing our series this week in Pop American Christianity. We'll talk about what he calls the Heresy Olympics, the Code Orange Revival, after this.
Memoria Press invites all Issues Etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on your favorite CPH Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.
Emily finally had to face the truth. Her church choir was a mess.
Katie Schuerman from her new audiobook, House of Living Stones.
Sure, they'd managed to turn out a few decent choral offerings for Sunday worship every now and then, but their confidence and morale were presently hanging lower than pants on a wrapper.
You can purchase and download an audio version of the novel House of Living Stones at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. House of Living Stones by Katie Schuerman.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning Chapel from Cramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.